Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Here we are in our Halloween studio. Happy Halloween, everyone. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donald on a Kitchen. We get together and talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions here on this fine radio station. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donald on a Kitchen show is sponsored by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Oh, brr, the first snowflakes fell this past weekend. It seems a bit early to me, but yes, it is. It is time. It is time. We are sliding into the colder parts of the year. Do you know where your mittens are? Boy, now's the time to kind of go ruffling in the back of that closet. I sure needed some this week. And see if you've stored things properly. I hope there's
moth-free,
right,
hopefully.
I hope there's no little things, you know, missing from your mittens and scarves and hats.
Especially not those dummy strings.
Yeah. Very
good. Gotta have those dummy strings.
Did you have those as a kid?
I did. Well, that, or sometimes there were those little elastic clip-ons that go on the end of the sleeves.
Yeah.
And I, believe me, I use them for my children. I use them for my grandchildren. Because who doesn't lose mittens all the time?
That's true. And if you learn quickly as a kid, especially with a little clip-on elastic ones, you can take your hand out of the mitten. Then you've got this mitten hanging there. And you can swat your brother really good with them.
Ha-ha! Ha-ha!
Well, so,
tricks.
Tricks. So do you know where your mittens are? We did have a hard frost. And there is the garden kind of going away. Well, over the weekend, I went to a very nice Central Iowa Barn Dance. I danced all night, calling by Roger Alexander, so I didn't have to get up there on the microphone and say anything. I just danced all night, and it was a fine evening. And we had some Halloween kind of tunes, and it was some spooky minor key sort of things. One of my favorite tunes, well, actually two of them, right in the middle, that band launched into The Wizard's Walk and Dancing Bear. And I do love to dance to those tunes. There they were. Yes, they were. Well, happy Halloween, everybody.
Lana and I are wearing our virtual costumes. And I bet you can't guess what we are.
Not a dancing bear. No, no.
No.
We're serious here. We are.
We are witches. Yes, the classic Halloween costume.
It
so
is.
Imagine us in our black robes with our broomsticks and our pointy black hats and our snaggly teeth and hee-hee-hee-hee-hee.
That is the cliche, but I think there's a lot more to witches than just that. But there's something very empowering.
We're good witches, of course.
Yeah, good witches. But even there's something empowering about dressing up and dressing up as a witch or dressing up as anything. I do like Halloween. I do. I did wear a costume to the barn dance, but I also have to be careful. You can't dance in everything, so I kind of keep my costumes for dancing kind of minimal. I have a jester's hat and some colorful ruffles to put on for dancing. Otherwise, you know, you don't want to poke somebody's eye out. So you don't. Anyway, so tell us about this time of year, Donna.
So a little witchy information from this is coming from The Grandmother of Time by Zuzana E. Budapest, a book in my personal library since 1979. And she says, for October 31st, which is Samhain, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is the Celtic word for Halloween, she says, the new year of the earth begins. We have reached the midpoint between the autumn equinox and the winter solstice. So this is a celestial holiday from ancient times when we ran the world by the calendar of the moons. This is the time to think about our own mortality. And I have to say, for good reason, when you go out and your whole garden is one day gorgeous and all those tithonia are still blooming away and the squash is climbing up all the walls, and the next morning you come out and everything is gray and droopy and dead, you know. So it's an obvious reminder that this is the time to think about our own mortality. The veil is the thinnest between the worlds tonight, and the dead souls visit their living relatives. The custom of going door to door collecting sweet cakes and money came from a British custom of begging for the poor. And when you let your kids go trick-or-treating, know that they represent the future. When children knock on your door, offer them gifts of sweets to sweeten their future. But the true stars of Halloween are the elderly. They represent the year, now worn and old and gray. Remember the grandmothers, the grandfathers, and the elderly relatives. To appease the past is also good luck for the future. Honor the dead as well. So kind of think of your past relatives that are no longer with us. And this is a night of all kinds of possibilities.
It is. It is. And I think we talk about facing our mortality. We kind of scare ourselves because it's so nice to realize that you can come close to death and still be alive, more or less. Yes, you can. Yes,
and death is an ever-present reality.
So this idea of sending kids out in the evening dressed as all sorts of, it's so nice to have little kids come to your door and be dressed as things, and they hold up their bags. This idea that they are our future, it's a very good thing. What are some good trick-or-treat things? You know, we always kind of have this guilt about giving kids sugar and all that kind of thing. And then there's this huge scare about, oh, you can't bake anything. You can't give them apples because heaven knows, because there must be some evil person that put pins and needles into things. What have we come to if we can't go to our neighbor's door and get a good treat? So what's a good thing to give kids?
Well, I live in the Old Town District, and we have a lot of trick-or-treaters because people in my neighborhood go all out for decorating their front yards. And, you know, I have a couple of pumpkins on my front porch. And so we get quite a lot of, it'll be this evening. I hope we're getting past that point where parents don't accept homemade treats. So a couple of suggestions are, of course, like, for example, Lana had some beautiful Empire apples, and they're not huge. Just giving out a nice apple is a lovely, healthy treat. Bags of popcorn or popcorn balls.
Ooh.
Those are good things, too, if you want to make homemade. And then, you know, the usual cookies and things. I have to say it's a bit sad to think that all people do is go to the regular grocery store, buy these huge bags of complete, you know, junk candy, which children, of course, love. But how much of it can you eat? I did see a few years ago in Ames, one of the dentists put a sign out in his yard saying that they would accept all of the junk candy and reward the children with, you know, money. If you turn in your candy, the dentist is going to give you money. I thought that was a very good, I mean, it's not going to drum up business for him, but in the best interest of the health of children, a little less candy might be a good idea. And if all else fails, remember that they have to brush their teeth well before they go to bed.
That is a good thing. Yes, it is. Oh, also, here's a trick. Since I live out in the country, trick-or-treaters are few and far between, but we have some kids. And one year, kids showed up. And I didn't have anything, doggone it. And so you keep the kids busy by let them play with a dog for a while. Here's a trick, and you can even, this is good for kids that you don't want to give sugar to. Grab a couple quarters, a couple nickels or whatever, wrap them in a piece of white paper towel and pinch it off, put a rubber band around it, and put two little black dots on that little wad of quarters, and there you have a ghost. You have a ghost. And again, kids, they'll realize, oh, it's cash money. This is not bad. Happy Halloween to you, too. So I've given my little ghost change or ghost money things, that works out okay, too.
You know what else I was thinking of? Helen Gunderson, who lives right here in Ames, has her little urban farm. And what she does on Halloween, she has planted a special bed of carrots. And when the children come to the door, she takes them out to the garden and they dig up a carrot for each child.
What a good thing. And they're even orange. It's a Halloween color.
I know. I think it's and children love that sort of thing, except the older, more jaded ones. But good for Helen.
Good. I hate to see the day when the kids will show up and want their credit card added to or something. Swipe my thing.
Oh, dear.
Things do have to change with the time. I have a little bit of things I remember reading here about witches. Witches tend to get a bad rap in our Judeo-Christian tradition.
There's a historical reason for that.
Oh, that's horrible. But witches, wise women, crones, the old folks, the healers, they were the ones there for birth and death, and often they were the wise women that knew how to brew beer, make medicines, and knew what to do with all the herbs. And before you had your HMOs and all those kind of insurance plans, you better know who to go to when you wanted something to treat a cold or something. And I remember reading once that the witches had the tall pointy thing.
Remember, we're virtually wearing one. Witch's hats on.
Originally, that was a handy way for people to find the herb woman at the local market. Look for the tall hat.
Right, because it would be above the crowd.
Above the crowd. And also the idea of a witch's broom. That came from, and I read this in
it. Wait. So the black hat was an advertising.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't always signage, black, but there it was. It's signage. It was a logo.
Okay.
And the broom, too. This is another. It's branding here. The broom. The broom was put out in the driveway or in the walkway or on the door of the woman who was brewing beer. And when the beer was ready, the broom went outside the door.
Ha!
So that was a way to tell that when the beer was ready.
Come and get your beer.
So there you go. So, again, early branding opportunities. There we have it. Witch's hats, tall, and witch's brooms. I don't think there's anything traditionally written down or remembered about anybody riding on a broomstick, but maybe.
It's good fun. And you know, historically, like the burning of the witches in the Middle Ages and stuff, this came about because in pre-Christian times, the women in the pagan, the earth-centered early peoples of the earth, historically what we have discovered is that, of course, the women did a lot of these things, as you said, the healing, the midwifing. And during the Middle Ages, as the power of the Christian church grew, they, of course, wanted to eliminate and kind of masculinize a lot of these. You know, they wanted the doctors to be men. They wanted the women to be kind of demoted in power, and that became the burning of the witches, to get rid of the old earth-centric ways that human beings had practiced for thousands and thousands of years. So it was a demoting of women's power. The thing about the witches, and we're getting a lot of this right now, you know, I mean, you have to say women didn't even vote in this country until the
1920.
Exactly. That's like less than 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Hello. So this is a the battle of the sexes or whatever. This is an issue that's been going on for a long time. And like the recent iterations, which I'm happy. Well, it's a sad story, but it's good to hear once again about, you know, all the sexual harassment that has gone on. And I'm very pleased to see all these young women stand up and say, no, this is not okay. No, this has happened to me. Of course, all of us older women, at some point in our lives, you know, this has happened to all of us. This goes on. There is no doubt about it. And it's very good to see it getting a lot of negative attention in the press from some very powerful men who have been doing not nice things for a long time, but to see it coming up again. No, we can't do this. No, we can't allow this. And on top of this, of course, women are reminding each other, having unequal pay. That is not okay. That is not okay. I don't expect it to change overnight. But the latest kerfluffle in the press is calling this to our attention in a very good way.
Yes, it is. It's funny when the powerful white guys are caught. Should we say with their pants down?
Their hands in inappropriate places, among other things. Right.
Well, then somehow everything has to be entertainment, even our news, and it entertains us. But I hope we learn. I hope we are learning, and this. The courage that so many women have now to say, me too, me too, me too.
Yeah, this happened to me, and it's not my fault. I shouldn't be ashamed of this. This is not okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read a wonderful thing from Jimmy Carter. So he wrote a few years ago, he wrote this piece as a kind of an op-ed, and I'm just going to read it straight out. He's saying, so this is his open letter, and it's about, he wrote it because after 60 years, he's a very Christian, devout, church-going man, and he was part of a large Southern Baptist convention, and after 60 years, he wrote this letter saying, this is Jimmy Carter, okay? This discrimination, unjustifiably attributed to a higher authority, has provided a reason or an excuse for the deprivation of women's equal rights across the world for centuries. At its most repugnant, the belief that women must be subjugated to the wishes of men excuses slavery, violence, forced prostitution, genital mutilation, and national laws that omit rape as a crime. But it also costs many millions of girls and women control over their own bodies and lives and continues to deny them fair access to education, health, employment, and influence within their own communities. The same discriminatory thinking that lies behind the continuing gender gap in pay and why there are still so few women in office in the West. The root of this prejudice lies deep in our histories, but its impact is felt every day. It is not women and girls alone who suffer. It damages all of us. And then he talks in his letter, he discusses that he's part of an independent group of global leaders, which are called the Elders. It was founded by Nelson Mandela, and the members have come together on issues and collectively published the statement to all religious leaders around the world. Here's the statement. The justification of discrimination against women and girls on the grounds of religion or tradition, as if it were prescribed by a higher authority, is unacceptable. This discrimination can and must end, says Carter. He believes it's within our power. Here's a further quote from Jimmy Carter. The truth is that male religious leaders have had and still have the option to interpret holy teachings either to exalt or subjugate women. They have, for their own selfish ends, overwhelmingly chosen the latter. Their continuing choice provides the foundation or justification for much of the pervasive persecution and abuse of women throughout the world. This is a clear violation of not just the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but also the teachings of Jesus, Moses, the Apostle Paul, the prophets Muhammad, and the founders of other great religions, all of whom have called for proper and equitable treatment of all the children of God. It is time we had the courage to challenge these negative views. So go, Jimmy. He's a wonderful patriarchal figure who is standing up for the rights of all of us.
Yes, we're considering, you thought this Halloween show was going to be about fun stuff, right? There's some serious stuff here. And
we're the good witches.
Thinking of powerful women, women all over, and what we still need to do. So as you go trick or treating, remember
Remember your grandmothers.
Remember your grandmothers. Yes, do. I remember trick-or-treating as a kid, and it was actually, you say we should honor the elders. It was always scary to go up to the neighbor's house where the old folks live. You didn't quite know them. You know, they were inside all the time, and I remember one time we went up, and I didn't know this couple very well, but it was my brother and I and my neighbor. My neighbor's name was Melvin. He was my playmate, Melvin. And we were had our little, we were allowed to go by ourselves. The parents didn't have to go then.
Yeah.
And this gruff old man, he wasn't in costume. He was just sitting there being himself. And he says, after we say trick or treat, he says, well, I'm not going to give you a treat. You have to give me a trick first. And we looked at each other. We didn't know anything. And so luckily, my friend Melvin always knew knock-knock jokes. So he told some, you know, a 9-year-old knock-knock joke or, you know, for an 8th year. It probably wasn't a very good joke. But that made that old man smile. We gave him a little something, and then we got a treat. So remember, it's a give-and-take thing. Be sure to say thank you, for goodness sakes. Yes, yes. And remember, things are looking up for women. We got to keep working at it. Let's celebrate the fact that finally, there are women in Saudi Arabia that can drive combustion engine cars. So it's kind of a mixed blessing there, but go. That's
right.
Good.
Saudi finally. Women have just been given the right to drive.
Finally.
Fancy that.
And we'll get
that
there.
That is for the ones that have cars, okay?
That's just
okay,
fine.
Okay, now, what about some scary news? There's a lot of scary. We've got plenty of reason to be scared these days.
We certainly do. And we're going to come back and talk about scary news. This is KHOI. This is your community radio station. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. Back. That was a little bit of music, a collection of tunes, and we'll hear more of that later, called the Mouse Jigs. This is the time of year when all those mouses like to get into our houses. So I thought I'd play the Mouse Jigs. Thanks for joining us today on the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is community radio, and your support is appreciated. Find out more about this station and this fine Donna Lana Kitchen show by going to khoifm.org. And you can find the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage there. Thanks to Ron Carson, our webmaster, for keeping us all up to date and spiffy looking. We have archives there. We have recipes. And you can find out lots more about this radio station. There are all kinds of locally produced and nationally produced shows that I'm sure will tickle your ears. We are talking about Halloween, and we have some scary news items from the Donna Lana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick, tick-a-tick. That's a ticker tape. Tick-a-tick. What do you have for us, Donna?
Well, the scariest thing I saw this week was the Journal of American Medical Association, which is sort of the preeminent, publication for doctors and health professionals. This is not a small deal. They released a study. It's on the excretion of the herbicide glyphosate in older adults between 1993 and 2016. It comes from something called the Rancho Bernardino Study of Healthy Aging, which was begun in 1972. This is a very large population study in Southern California. And so the newest findings are they did a urinary testing, and they found out that between 1993 and 2016, the amount of glyphosate in urinary excretion has increased 500%. That's a big deal.
500%.
Big deal. 500% more glyphosate in humans in that time span. And I have to say, this was a population in Southern California. I can't even imagine what it is in Iowa. And this is through dietary consumption, including, of course, water sources. And I suppose it would get in maybe through the air. But mostly glyphosate is used on genetically modified crops, of which we live in the middle of oceans and oceans of them. So for us Iowans, it should be a big concern. Glyphosate has been declared a probable carcinogen, at least by the state of California. It now has to be labeled. It's, of course, a contentious issue because the providers, the large corporations that produce glyphosate, are heavily contesting this. Now, this has become in the press in the last, at least in the last year. This is sort of like the big tobacco moment. There's been a lot of exposure of how the corporate interests have been controlling the science and the research behind it. And in a lot of ways, it's following, we all know how tobacco companies for years said, oh, no, tobacco's not harmful, when they knew, au contraire, that, of course, it was. And there was a large cover-up, which was eventually outed. And some of these same things are going on in the courts, in governing bodies. A lot of discovery has been going on of collusion between the government agencies that are supposed to have regulated this. So it's a big deal because our population, unlike smoking, where, yes, of course, there's secondhand smoke, but you could choose to smoke or not to smoke. The exposure to the population at large to a lot of these chemicals is not something that we have done consciously. So this was my scary news for the week. 500% increase of glyphosate within human beings.
For goodness sakes. Well, this could be bad news, good news. At least human beings will probably not be attacked by corn borers.
Oh,
no.
Yes, of course not.
We're set there. This is not good news. We should know what goes into our bodies.
Yes, and the good news is it's being looked into now quite seriously. Pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. And I have to say, to some tiny extent that it might be helpful, try to choose organic foods when you can. The glyphosate is not only used in genetically modified agriculture, it's also sprayed on almost all small grains to dry them out as a desiccant. So that is another way that people are eating the glyphosate and they don't know it. So organic is good. Try that. That could reduce your exposure.
More scary news. Speaking of eating things, we know this. Big corporations are aggressively making people fatter. It's good for them to sell stuff. It's good for them that when we eat stuff that makes them money. However, there are now more than 700 million obese people in the world.
Well, and the corporate connection is this is processed foods, okay? They take in, there are inexpensive ingredients like certain fats, palm oils, and sugars are not that expensive compared to like using fruits and vegetables and things like that to formulate products, snack products, anything processed. So a company that wants to make money, as all companies are supposed to do. This is, you know, this is the capitalist system, after all. Doesn't make it bad. But it's much easier for them to use the cheaper ingredients, which happen to be higher in sugars and higher in caloric content than it is to put the really good, healthy stuff in. So there you have it.
That's scary. And another little scary thing. This was even on the national news last night, so people are actually listening to this. Global CO2 levels are the highest in 3 million years. That's not like 3 years or 300 years.
So there was a new study that showed that. Of course, we did suspect that was coming.
So here we are. It seems like if somebody said, hey, folks, your house is burning, we might want to do something about this. All this, this is scary news. Now, scary news, but there is some good news from our Donalana Kitchen News Department.
Oh, yes, we have a nice little thing to announce. So Kevin and Rand Dietzel, who've been on the show talking about their Lost Lake Farm, our cheesemakers, our local cheesemakers, have won an award. So the Iowa Valley Resource Conservation Development, RCND, which is in Cedar Rapids, has honored Kevin and Rand with a Boots on the Ground Award for beginning farmers. So congratulations to Lost Lake Farm and Kevin and Renee.
Very good.
We're proud of you.
Very good.
Blessed are the cheesemakers.
Blessed they are. Yes, they
okay.
are.
Okay.
So continuing our Halloween theme, here is a little ode to things that go bump in the night from Lewis Carroll. It's the Jabberwocky. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite and claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun that frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand, long time the manxome foe he sought. So he rested by the tum-tum tree and stood a while in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock, with eyes of flame, came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came. One, two, and through the vorpal blade went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. Oh, hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy, O frabjous day, calloo-callay! He chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Oh, yes, they did. That was a little ode to things that go bump in the night. We love scaring ourselves. And here's a little tune about a pink skeleton. That was a warning about the pink skeletons in the woods. And what is scariest about that whole little song is that it was written and performed by Leah and Rainey Miyake, and they are just 11 and 9 years old. Isn't that scary when that happens? Great musicians. We'll hear a little bit more from them later. Rainey, their band is called Rainey and the Rattlesnakes. Isn't that lovely? Anyway, you're listening to KHOI, and we'll go to some more music from Rainey and the Rattlesnakes. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a little tune called Billy in the Low Ground. So consider, I don't know, maybe Billy's in his grave. I don't know. This is Halloween. It could be. It could be. This time of year, on porches, you find jack-o'-lanterns. Why do people bother with this jack-o'-lantern thing?
Well, it's fun.
It is fun.
It's good, creative, family fun.
It is. I looked into the history of jack-o'-lanterns, and pumpkins and carving of vegetables has been common in many parts of the world, and gourds were used. In Europe and in Ireland, they didn't really have a lot of pumpkins until they came back from the New World with things, but people have been carving and putting candles in things like turnips and gourds and things. They've been doing that for a long time. And it is thought that the idea of a jack-o'-lantern and the term jack-o'-lantern came from Ireland, where all good things come from, of course, and from the legend of Stingy Jack. The practice originated from an Irish myth about a man named Stingy Jack. According to the story, Stingy Jack invited the devil to have a drink. True to his name, Stingy Jack didn't want to pay for his drink, so he convinced the devil to turn himself into a coin, and Jack used that to buy their drinks. Once the devil did so, Jack didn't even pay for the drink. He decided to keep the money and put it into his pocket next to a silver cross, which prevented the devil from changing back. Jack eventually freed the devil under the condition that he would not bother Jack for another year, and should Jack die, he would not claim his soul. Well, this Stingy Jack story goes on and on because Jack outwits the devil all the time, of course, but Jack eventually dies. As the legend goes, he went up to heaven. God would not allow such an unsavory figure into heaven, so he turned to the devil, and the devil, upset by all the trickery Jack had done for him, said, "I'm not going to let you in here either." So they set Jack off into the dark night with only a burning coal to light his way. And he has to travel the earth. Jack put the coal, at that time, into a carved-out turnip. And he's been roaming the earth ever since. The Irish begin to call that ghostly figure Jack of the Lantern, or Jack-o'-lantern. There, Jack-o'-lantern. There it is. It is. And here we are with the best things of all to be carving. I mean, turnips are fine, but you have to be awfully good with a knife.
Well, they also must have larger turnips.
I think so.
You know?
Well, rutabagas are large. Large turnips. But boy, I'd probably slice my thumb. I love looking at how people really get fancy with pumpkins. And a good friend made a pumpkin, and she put bats all over the front of it. It was a little circle with little bat wings coming out. So this whole big pumpkin had bats on it. And my husband Joel looked at that, and he said, "Why did Emily put all those teapots on the front of her pumpkin?" Oh, I said, "Joel, it's a good thing you are married to a graphic designer. Those, my dear, are bats. I knew that. It's nice to have a pumpkin out on your step. Nice job, Emily. That was a good job to do. We have something about all those pumpkins. They have to be grown. It is an agricultural product. Pumpkins are an agricultural product.
Yes, we can eat them.
And here's a bit of a story that was recorded by our friend Nick Odie, works for Practical Farmers of Iowa, and he was interviewing farmers all last summer, and he met a man that grows large, large pumpkins and other stuff.
A pumpkin farmer.
And other stuff, too. Our man in the field, Nick Odie, talked to a man who grows larger than usual vegetables. If you've ever wondered, where do they come from? This man, Marty Schnichter, is a grower of large vegetables.
I mean really large.
Yes, last month.
Like the typical large pumpkin at a fair is, I mean, I don't know how many pounds, but let's say they're what do you think they are? 4 feet in diameter or something?
As big as this table. It's pretty scary.
They're pretty.
Nick Odie interviewed this fine farmer.
Have you ever wondered how they grow those giant veggies at the state fair? With us today is Marty Schnicker of Schnicker Specialties, who farms with his wife Mary near Mount Pleasant in southeast Iowa. Marty knows how to grow really big vegetables. He holds the Iowa state record for heaviest watermelon grown, tipping the scales at 209 pounds. But watermelons aren't the only thing. They grow big everythings, from cabbage to cantaloupe to the favorite, pumpkin.
You know, everybody goes, well, how much fertilizer? Go, well, it's not really the fertilizer. It's just all the organic supplements we're putting into the soil that feed in the soil, from the cover crops to the compost to everything that we're feeding that soil, bringing in the microbes, bringing in the earthworms, anything that's beneficial is living in this soil. So it's just amazing what these plants can do if you get your soil and everything just right.
So a 209-pound watermelon, how big is that? Can you give me a comparison? Is this like the size of a small car?
It's a good size. It'll fill up the back of a minivan on the back in the back. It was about 70 inches around in the middle. If you can, plus it was about 3 foot long. So it was really a lot to try to carry and handle. I don't know, would you be a small pig probably? Not quite for market, or really close to market size. So it was, that's what a lot of people kind of compared it to.
So maybe you could walk me through the process on one of those things, like a watermelon. How does that start, and how's it different from just, you know, growing a good, nice watermelon for the market or something?
Of course, we still want to get the soil pretty much pumped up like we do our pumpkin. So we're going with a really loamy, well-balanced soil, actually very high in everything nutrient-wise. And then we're going to get a seed from a proven, something that's been big. And it's got genetics in it. It's been crossed. It's been hand-pollinated. We know what the genetics is behind it. It's not open-pollinated. So we know we're getting a good genetic seed, and then we start them inside about the end of March, 1st of April, because we want something outside and pollinated at least before July. For the state fair, of course, we have to start a lot earlier than that, but for something to get 200 pounds or bigger, we have to get them outside pretty good time, because they're going to grow 85 to 105 days to get them full size. So once we get the plant out there, we're babying it, we're getting it down. We want to try to get a nice long set on. We hand pollinate them. We put fabric underneath of them. We shade them. We don't let the sun hit them. And we're constantly measuring them about every other day to see how they're doing. We have to move them because they're growing both directions to try to keep the stem straight on them so they're not going to get a kink in it. So there's a lot of upkeep with them, keeping the bugs off, keep ventilation on them. We try to set one fruit, no more than two on a plant. If we can, just one. If I have enough plants, I can just do one on a plant. But if I'm limited on my area to grow them, I'll actually put two on. So that's kind of what we want to do. We just let those plants kind of do what they want, and we just feed them as much organic stuff as possible, and just kind of watch the plant, monitor it, make sure it's still growing well, and just go for the ride from there. Once we get it going, we just kind of watch it, keep the soil levels, moisture levels consistent, and just enjoy it. That's the fun part of it.
You mentioned a little bit about, you know, trying to put amendments in the soil. What kind of fertilizer requirements do these things take? I mean, how much are they using?
They're using quite a bit of nutrients. We prep everything in the fall. If we bring in, I mean, I've been known to bring in like 15 dump trucks full of decomposed manures, or going somewhere and getting a load of compost and just piling it. And then in the fall, I just amend this soil constantly. Every year, we're putting at least 2 inches of new compost on top of the soil, getting it worked into it. We put some cover crops on it. We'll work the cover crops in if we have time to get that all into the soil. Leaves, I mean, I go and I get, you know, hundreds of bags of leaves, shred them up, we move them, we put them on in the fall and work them in. So this soil is so organic and so pumped up and loose, you know, it's like we could get 2 inches of rain and then the next day you're out working in the soil because it's draining so well and the roots have so much area to go. It's just amazing how far these roots on these plants will go out beyond that pumpkin with such a good organic and so loose soil.
So in one sense, it's It's just a kind of an intensification of the things that are just good for any plant to grow in.
Yes, yes. And that's the whole thing is, you know, we'll get normal vegetables out there, and they're twice as big as anything out just in a normal garden, just from the nutrient level that we're feeding these plants. You know, and it's so, you know, everybody goes, well, how much fertilizer? Go, well, it's not really the fertilizer. It's just all the organic supplements we're putting into the soil that feed in the soil from the cover crops to the compost to everything that we're feeding that soil, bringing in the microbes, bringing in the earthworms, anything that's beneficial is living in this soil. So it's just amazing what these plants can do if you get your soil and everything just right.
You grow a lot of vegetables you sell at a farmer's market in Mount Pleasant. Is that what?
Yes.
Yeah. So what are some of the vegetables you sell there, and do you sell some slightly bigger veggies there that sell well?
Usually the onions. Once the onions are done, the onions are a big, you know, everybody wants to brag about the onions. So they want to come and buy one of those 4 or 5 pound onions, the sweet onions. So they're a wonderful onion ring maker, you know, and, you know, everybody, conversation piece. We'll bring in some of the jumbo kohlrabi. We'll bring in the big cabbages and stuff. They'll usually win best of show at the fair here in Henry County because they're just absolutely gorgeous cabbage, but they're huge, you know, so everybody loves to see that big stuff. It makes great conversation at the farmer's market table. We bring them in. Sometimes we'll bring them in something if they guess the weight for to win some free produce or something. You know, we'll do something like that just to get people involved. And, you know, we don't just do vegetables, you know. So what we sell at farmer's market, a lot of heirloom stuff. And that's the thing with a lot of these giant things. They're all heirloom fruit. It's things that's been growing, been around for years, you know. So there's not any what you call anything really different out there. It's just we're bringing back a lot of the heirloom stuff, the German giant radishes. Are kind of our claim to fame for farmer's market because our German giant radishes are baseball to softball size and totally solid, you know, because our soil is so pumped up and so delicious. Yes, so it depends on the year. You know, the more stress they have, the more sugars they release. So they always say, you know, if you get a cold snap or a hot snap, it kind of stresses the plant to produce more sugar. So everybody always talks about when it's a hot year, how much, you know, how good the sweet corn is because all that heat turns everything into sugars. So, and the tomatoes are a lot the same way, you know, the summertime tomatoes are so delicious. And then in the fall, when the weather cools, they say, well, the tomatoes just don't have the flavor as they did earlier. It's just because of the weather, you know. So it's keeping everything, the stress from whatever, the coldness and the heat will produce more sugars into the vegetables and give them more flavor.
I bet his stuff tastes good.
I bet it does, too. Some scary big vegetables from Marty Schnicker. Thanks to Nick Odie for that interview. Oh, yes, it's time for the fall garden. Well, actually, it's almost time for the winter garden. My stuff is all frozen. I don't know about everybody else's. And, yes, this is the time of year to haul in those bags of leaves. And if you happen to know someone with a horse, that's really handy. It's nice to have some manure to put on the garden, and that's good.
Time for the death and decay cycle.
It is.
All right.
And also time to plant garlic. I am sitting here pretty in our studio here with my witch's hat on for Halloween. And, yes, I do have my garlic in the ground. Yes,
oh,
I do.
Oh, good girl.
And it is not too late to plant garlic. There's different kinds of garlic, but the German stiffneck varieties grow very well around here. And it's a fun thing to grow, even if you don't think you have a green thumb. Garlic pretty much takes care of itself. It does need full sun. And like Marty Schnichter was talking about, the soil, the better the soil you put it into, the more it will be happy.
And the soil is not frozen yet. So you take a clove, right?
Yes, you break apart the heads.
And you put the, does it go with the point side up?
It goes with the point side up and the...
And how deep into the ground?
As far as I can push it with my thumb.
One thumb.
And everybody's thumb is different. But
Rhonda does not have a large thumb.
I have a small thumb. Two inches,
probably.
Yeah, there you go. Push it in as far as you can. And then I let the ground freeze a little bit. I mean, not waiting for the snow to fly too much, but I will eventually, in another week or two, put some good mulch on top of that. We've got some straw bales sitting there ready to go, and that really is nice. It's something else that the garlic likes this time of year. You found a persimmon tree.
Oh, I did. I was out at the Arboretum this weekend. We did a lovely annual meeting for the Iowa Sierra Club. Good for them. A good luncheon was had by all, and they did some they handed out like an award to Art Cullen for his reporting. And I must say it was lovely to meet him. He looks like Mark Twain. Anyway, so while I was out there at the end of the parking lot, I occasionally happen to be out there that time of year, and I know that they have two persimmon trees.
Ooh, ooh.
Two different varieties of native Iowa persimmons. This is about as far north as you can go, but I do remember them from my childhood, as my mother was from southeast Missouri, so they do have more persimmons down there. So I picked all the ones off the ground that I could get, and I'm having a few lovely little persimmons.
Oh, very good. Are they ripening already?
Oh, yeah. They're very ripe.
Oh, good.
They're very – well, you don't want to eat persimmons that are not ripe,
that's
right?
That's true. That's true.
Then you
true.
Got puckering persimmons. So I got some persimmons this weekend. I was delighted to find them. They are rare. I do have a persimmon tree, but persimmons are those kinds of trees where you need the male and the female, and I only have one gender. And even though we've tried to, what's that call where you take the other gender and you try and graft it on?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we've been trying to do that, but we haven't been successful yet. So it is persimmon season or the very end of it. It is also chestnut season. Don't forget to have your chestnuts, folks.
Yes, and that is something that is people are planting more of here in the state.
Yes, the new breed of chestnuts that have been bred to withstand the blight that has killed so many of our marvelous American chestnuts. We're now far enough past that we are getting the new chestnuts in, and they're more and more available. They're not huge, but they are quite tasty.
Ah, very good. So, there's a few upcomings here. Some things are – the Ames Public Library is having a book sale starting Thursday evening, and then Thursday evening, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can go and find something there and support that fine organization. And another fine organization to support is this community radio station. KHOI is having a fundraiser officially starting next week, I think.
Right. This will be our on-air fundraising drive. Yeah. You will hear us going on and on about how important this is.
Right. And we only exist because of people like you. We are not a corporate funded, or we are not even government funded.
And we don't have commercials.
And yes, we are. So this is your radio station, and we appreciate your support. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Today we've talked about Halloween things. We talked about witches. We talked about scary news. We talked about jack-o'-lanterns. And we come to you from KHOI. You can find out more at khoifm.org. Thanks for joining us today. We talked about witches today, and we talked about scary news, and we talked about scary big vegetables. Oh, my goodness. There's so much to keep us busy here in central Iowa. Have a good beggar's night. Have a good Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween.
We had music today by Rainy and the Rattlesnakes. Yes, and also we had music today by the Canadian band called Fluke, F-L-O-O-K, Fluke. And we'll go out with more of those mouse jigs. Here they are. Happy Halloween. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintos.
We've had fine engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.